Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 53 of Crosshairs Radio. Today we have another They Don't Do That in Europe episode with Scott Diedenbach and also David Pallon. We also have a special guest, our New York City correspondent, Ed Nesson, who was able to go up to Northampton, check out that race, and give us the lowdown on that. We're going to cover all of the US UCI races that happened in the last couple weeks. Also, we're going to be heading over to Europe and talking about those races that happened and even those races that didn't happen. So a jam-packed episode for all of your traveling that you may be doing over the next couple days. Before we get started, a couple really cool sponsors for today's show. First off, Vene Vidi Velo Cycle Club. This is a new CompuTrainer studio that's opened up in Arlington, Virginia. So, you know, definitely for all of you DMV folks who are in the area, this is really DC Metro, DC right there. If you want to get into these CompuTrainer classes, it's really convenient to get to. You can even ride your bike over there. And if you're traveling in from out of town and want to get a workout in, this is a great place to go. They have 14 trainer stations, 4 TVs set up for all your live training data and entertainment needs. There's coffee, there's recovery beverages. They've really thought about everything that you need in indoor training. We don't, you know, a lot of us don't like to ride our bikes inside, but if you have to, this is the type of situation that really makes it cool. You can go in there, take a class, you can go in there with your team. One thing that makes it great for cyclocross fans is that on November 27th, early in the morning, 7:45 a.m., they're going to be live streaming HAMA, the DVV race, from Belgium. So that's an awesome time. You can go in there, just watch, or you can go in there and ride. But go check out Vene Vidi Velo Cycle Club. It's the best time to do it. Single classes are $20 if you use the code $20CLASS, CLASS. And you can do that at venevidivelo.cc. So V-E-N-I VIDIVELO.CC. Also worth noting that the first class that you do is always free at sign up. You don't need a code for that one. These guys are cyclists, local cyclists who started this up. I think it's a great idea. I think it's definitely a business worth supporting again for all of us in the DC metro area. But also, I know many of you who listen to this podcast travel to the East Coast, travel down to the capital now and then, and it'd be a great one to check out as well if you're in town. VeneVidiVelo.cc. Next sponsor is one of my favorite races ever. Actually, one of the first cyclocross races I ever did. It's the Capital Cross Classic. It's the last event number 8 in the Bike Reg Super 8 cyclocross series. It's happening December 4th, at Lake Fairfax Park in Reston, Virginia. This is where this race has taken place for the past 17 years. It's one of the oldest races on the East Coast. They've been a UCI race at one point. They were a grassroots race. I remember racing it not even the beginning, but a couple years in when there were, you know, 30, 40 people out there, and it was, you know, you could not get more grassroots all the way up to where they are now. It's an exceptional course. It always reminds me of something that you would see in Belgium. It flows really well. There aren't a lot of superfluous turns in there. It's just a great venue to go out and spectate, and especially to race. It has some real European style features like the chute, which is a pretty white knuckle descent. You have a big climb, a big run up. You know, some people can ride it. Most people are running it up. You're going over a bridge over the lake or a little canal path on there. We have new features this year. Going to be playing in the woods a lot more. I know it's December. I know that everybody's starting to pack in their cyclocross season, but if you are in the DC area, or even if you want to travel for one of the best races on the East Coast, this is the one to do it. Cap Cross Classic. You can go on to Bike Reg. Just search for Capital Cross Classic. If you want the actual URL, it's capital-cross-classic-cyclo-cross-race. That seems like too much. Just go to bikereg.com, type in Capital Cross Classic. What else can I tell you about? Oh, Omegang Barrier Primes, the promoter for this race, upstate New York guy. So he's got the Omegang hookup. So definitely come and take advantage of that. One of our favorite photographers, Daryl Parks, Pez Cycling. He's going to be out there taking pictures. We got food trucks, little Belgian races, everything that you're looking for this race. And the other cool thing is that all the proceeds from the race go to the Lake Fairfax Sustainable Natural Trail System Program. That's an organization that builds new sustainable trails, restores existing trails. Last year, CapCross funds were used to help to build a $20,000 pump track in Lake Fairfax Park. So you're actually racing cyclocross, helping cycling at the same time. Once again, December 4th, everyone go sign up, CapCross Classic. And that's it. Let's get on with our show right now. Take it away, Scott.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of They Don't Do That in Europe. With me, as always, right down the middle, right across the table, Mr. David Palin.
Hey, 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 or Dave Bebe.
And also with me on my left in the crosshairs, Mr. CX Hairs himself, Bill Shiken. Bill, what's up?
What's up? Too much. And not enough.
And guys, we have a special guest with us this week. It is Ed Nessen. Did I pronounce your last name right?
Yes, you did.
Ed. Yes, thank Ed. You. Welcome back. I was going to say welcome back, but welcome to the show. First time.
Thank you very much. Long time listener, first time caller.
Yeah, you're just not allowed to take your answer off the line, though.
Yeah. right.
Super excited to be here, but
excellent. Well, we're glad to have you too, and that's good because we had to have somebody that went to one of these races. So perfect.
Guys.
So we've got a bunch of smaller C2 races in the U.S. this week that we're going to go through the results.
And one. Let's not get in trouble right off the bat. One of the largest C2 races, the largest.
Yeah, I don't mean. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't mean all of them were small C2s. Yeah. I just meant they weren't C1s, I guess, is what I was getting at. You know what I meant. But probably one of the bigger things to talk about is going to be the race that didn't happen. I'm sure we're going to be talking about that. And then we got a couple Europe races. So let's get on with it. You guys ready?
Yeah. And then viewer mail.
Mail. We got, the questions are awesome, guys. Keep them coming. We love the questions, and we kind of give good answers, don't you think?
Sometimes.
Well, let's see. Kind of early to make that assessment.
All right. Well, so we're going to start out. I'm just going to go through these results. I'm going to give top three men, top three women of a bunch of the C2 races that happened that through the country. We're going back actually a couple weeks because we didn't have a show last week because of your great interview with Rebecca Farringer, Bill.
Yeah, that was a good one. If y'all haven't listened to that one yet, it's episode 52. So go check that out.
Yeah, kudos to you on that one, Bill. And thank you to Go Far.
Yeah.
Go Far. Yeah. So, all right.
Gave her a little extra watts this weekend. I don't want to give away anything coming up.
Yeah, it's true.
No spoilers.
So, all right, we're going to start out talking about Cycle Smart in Northampton. Ed, this is the race that you were at. But for the men, first place went to, this is on the 12th, so this was a Saturday, right? First place went to Curtis White. Second place, Jack Kissaberth, I don't know if I pronounced that right, and third place, Jeremy Durin. For the women, first place was Maglia Roche, second place, Emma White, third place, Crystal Anthony. Let's just keep going down because that same day was the Tulsa Tough Race. So for the men in the Tulsa Tough Race, first place was Skylar Mackey, second place was Casey Hildebrandt, and third place was John Purvis. For the women, first place, Sunny Gilbert. If you remember, I was talking about how well Sunny was racing at Louisville. So that was good to see. Second place went to, I can't even read my writing. Christine Grokey Smith. Third place went to Laura Van Gilder. So that was that first day of that weekend. The next day of the weekend, give the Northampton results for the next day. For the women, start out with the women this time. First place was Emma White. Second place, Ella Noble. Third place, Maglia Roche. For the men, first place was Curtis White. Second place, Jeremy Powers. I believe Jeremy got fourth on the first day. And third place was Dylan McNichols. So that wrapped up that whole weekend. Then we came down to just this past weekend. This past weekend, we had, of course, CXLA, probably the biggest or one of the biggest C2 races in the country. Used to be a C1. Would you guys say, is it the biggest C2, you think?
No, I think Northampton is.
Or Northampton? Is it pretty close?
What's it gets good people, but I think there were really big fields at Northampton. I don't know the exact...
The announcer said in Northampton, I cannot verify this as fact, but that it was the largest men's and women's field of the entire year.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think that's
by weight or volume or what?
Displacement.
Ah, there we go.
All right. Well, so for the first day of CXLA, for the women, first place was Katarina Nash, second place Amanda Miller, third place Courtney McFadden. For the men, first place was Tobin Ortenblad, second place Jamie Driscoll, third place Alan Krugoff. Then also that day we had the Supercross Cup. For the women, Maglia Roche, second place Crystal Anthony, third place Rebecca Ferringer. And for the men, Jack Kisseberth again, second place was Curtis White, and third place was Travis Liverman. Continuing on, the next day, this would be November 20th at CXLA again for the women. First place was Katarina Nash, second place Amanda Miller, third place Courtney McFadden. For the men, Tobin Ortenblad, first place, second place Jamie Driscoll, third place Michael Vandenham. And finally, to end off this list, that same day was in the Supercross Cup for the women. First place was Maglia Roche. Second place, Crystal Anthony. Third place, Rebecca Ferringer. And for the men, first place, Curtis White. Second place, Jeremy Martin. And third place, Jack Kisseberth.
All right. Whew. There it is. Everybody get all
that. Go over that craziness. One more time.
So we just want to mention that we just wanted to get through all those results. And now we're going to kind of chat about all these this group of C2 races as a whole. So we can all just chit chat about it. Why don't we start out with Ed? Ed, tell us about the first day at Northampton. Anything stick out? What's it like? What kind of course is it? I've never been there. I don't think, David, have you ever been there?
Never to the racing in Northampton. No.
Yeah, cool. Give us a... Tell us what
it's
like.
I would highly recommend going. It's definitely, in my opinion, a must-do race at least once. I had planned a race and ended up getting sick, so I wasn't sure if I was sick or just tired, so I raced the first day and then realized very quickly I was sick, and then that actually led to the second day, I believe the first time I have ever actually gone to a cross race and just watched. Yeah. Which turns out to be super fun.
Yeah, I know. It's something you don't want to get used to, or you'll just say, hey, yeah, screw that racing part. Let me just go watch.
then they hit the mic and you have the perfect excuse to never race again.
That's right.
Yeah. This is
or you, yeah, or you end up in friends. The work in the pit.
Yeah, exactly. That's too much work. But it's a great race. If you look at it on paper, you think it's kind of, there's a large flat field that has a lot of turns, but there's some kind of broken up with some baseball diamonds, you know, so you have some loose dirt. And then there's a portion that goes up, there's sort of a hillside into the woods. And over the past several years, they've kind of been expanding that woods section more and more. That's kind of where all the technical bits are. And really, you know, Meyerson has organized that race. And that kind of technical part has gotten better and better every year.
We should mention that he's been organizing that race since he's been in college.
Yeah, 26
oh
years.
Oh my, that's
maybe?
Awesome.
Oldest, yeah. I think oldest UCI cross race in America.
I believe that's correct.
If I'm not mistaken. Yep. Or continuous or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this year they had some great stuff in that woods portion, some really good pro only sections, some like insane steep descents. One of the most famous parts of that race is this very, very steep run-up. They had kind of this off-camber, really rocky, descent, and then the pros then went straight into the run-up, and then big steep descent. That was actually day two, but it was good. You know, it's a classic New England town, classic New England weather. It was kind of like the first colder race of the year for me, at least. And it's always a super, super fun time. And turns a course you'd think maybe on paper doesn't look that exciting into a really, really fun race.
So when you're when you're looking at these pro-only sections, and I know that all of us have seen them at races, and sometimes you look at them and you go, doesn't really seem like it's anything that is that special.
Yes.
I'm assuming these certainly were ones that, people could get hurt on if they were.
Yes, absolutely. Day one, the pro only section, I thought like, maybe I could do that one. There were some injuries in pre-ride, I believe, even on the non-pro section of the descent. There was like an amateur section directly next to it. But the second day, the descent was really wicked steep, and it was just went straight, dead end into a left-hand turn. And you had the big padding on the tree and everything.
Yeah.
It was pretty gnarly.
Huh.
And I'm just going to point out to my two regular friends here. How steep did you hear that was?
I know you have a
my brother.
Yes.
My brother. I missed it.
I lived that finally speaks the language. It was wicked.
Not from there, but lived up there for a few years, so.
It is wicked steep.
It was wicked steep.
That's truly pissing.
Yeah. But the funny thing, I would say one thing that sticks out to me about day one is early in the race, I believe it was Curtis White and Jeremy Powers had separated away from the group. I'm maybe confusing this with day two, but I believe it was day one. And
they were first and second on day two, so
day
it might have been day two. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought this was day one, and they were sort of separated off the front of the group. And there's a Jam Fund guy in there, and we're like, geez, that guy's having a hell of a ride, sticking with those two guys. Who is that, And then there you go, lo and behold, this weekend, first place, Jack Tisberth.
Yeah.
There you go.
And he is, how old is Jack? He's...
I mean,
hang on.
I don't know offhand, but I would say early 20s.
He's 24.
Probably.
24.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's
pretty impressive, right?
But definitely, sort of making a name for himself this year. He's been up there close, and now getting these wins, pretty awesome. Another Jam Fund success story.
Yeah, I would
Boy,
say
those folks from Jam Fund, they know how to develop their riders, huh?
They certainly do, David.
Day two. It was just, well, I guess, I don't know. Or do we want to go to day two later? Or?
Sure. No, that's good. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah,
day two, it was an awesome battle between Curtis White and Jeremy Powers. Just like blow for blow, attacking. Like I said, there was that really kind of gnarly off-camber descent. And they were just flying down that thing. I mean, it was frightening, the speed. And came down go ahead.
No, go ahead.
There were like two long straights. So when you came into the finish, it was like a long straight and then a 180 and then another long straight to the line. And the whole last lap, they were just going back and forth, attacking each other. And they came into that corner, and I think Powers attacked, Curtis attacked, and then Powers counterattacked and got out in front. And they basically just came in flying into that corner full speed. And Powers said basically he had to brake, and he was certain White was going to crash. And he held it upright and came around and held it out for the win. It was pretty impressive.
That's awesome.
It's a great battle.
Little game of chicken there right up to the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, it's good to see that, Bill, because I think you were saying last week that's one of the things that Powers said. He's got to get his mind back around racing like that,
right?
It's like part of the whole thing about having the injury and being like not up there racing at the front like that again is just something you kind of lose that little edge. So it's cool to see him right back in there. So that's awesome to hear. That's really cool to hear.
Yeah, it was great. It was nice. Powers seemed to me like the most kind of his old self as I've seen. I mean, it's different when you see him in person, but kind of back to what you saw previous, you know, last season so far this year. So maybe he's like starting to really come back.
Yeah, and it's hard to gauge as well because it's like Curtis continues to get fat. You know, because like last year, it'd be like, well, he would never, you know, Curtis was strong, but you'd always expect Powers to be, you know, well ahead of him. So it's sort of this. It's really hard, especially with Steven not there. It's hard to like gauge where anybody is at this point.
That's true, but it was great. I mean, when they came across the line, especially day two, like. Neither of them had anything left.
Yeah. You know? No, that's great. That's awesome.
It was pretty awesome to see.
That is.
The only other note I'd say from that race was it was really cool to see Magali Rochette back in kind of, you know, winning. She, I believe, had like heat stroke or something at Rochester.
Yeah, she did. I think she's the one. Yeah, she was the ambulance ride. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So it's kind of nice to see her coming back to where she wants to be, I would think. And also Crystal Anthony, you know, a little bit of a slow start to the season.
And Rochette wearing her national champs jersey too, right?
Yeah.
The Canada national champion.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. And then we had this weekend CXLA. Now, something we don't see a lot in CXLA was mud.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Did you guys see that mud on Sunday?
Yeah, it was, and it wasn't like super hot either. It was almost like a little bit of New England in Southern California.
And a lot of racers saying they were running like file tread LAS Clements on Saturday and then like full mud PDX on Sunday. I mean, like one extreme to the other between the 2 days. So that's kind of stuff that's just awesome. I mean, that's what makes cyclocross so cool, in my opinion.
Yeah. And
when you get that big of a change in one weekend, all at the same place.
Yeah, and a quality podium, you know, at the top of that race, just big names, same up in Supercross. And I think that's something that, you know, is a conversation we've had before and we may get into a little bit more, is like when we talk about these C2 races, that's kind of what you want to see, right? We had the best of the West and the best of the East sort of battling it out, almost like two conferences, as opposed to when we get these races that are more closer together and then everybody's battling for the same talent and then half the country's just left out.
Yes, I completely agree with you. I think this is one of the better C2 weekends this past weekend that we just had when we have one coast and the other coast. And like you said, it's almost like a East-West or all-star game, you know? And you get the competition amongst the two sides there. And I think this is one of the best C2 weekends. And like you said, big names in both races, big fields in both races, and mud. So just a lot of cool stuff this past weekend.
How about that Cliff Bar team kind of killing it?
Yeah.
Both sides.
Well, it's always funny when, you know, you never know with Nash. You know, it's like when she decides she's going to race. So she's always that wild card showing up.
I really miss, you know, I think she was pulling back from racing in Europe this year. I really miss seeing her over there.
Yeah.
Because that one year when it was like her and last year.
The only reason she went back was, I mean, the motivation was it was the, you know, the Czech Republic had the world championship. So she wanted to do all those World Cups just to make sure that she had a good starting position. And then when she was racing that year, everybody was like, holy crap, she should have never stopped.
That was like the last year Mariana Voss was strong, you know, that was sort of like before her injury issues. Right. And then
I think that was the cause. I think it was one of those races that she really screwed up her knee.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, it was, I'd like to see Nash more in Europe, but you know, she's really
another racer who had good results both days at CXLA for the women was Sophia Gomez-Villafane. She finished just off the podium, I believe, both days. And I think Courtney, who got third on the second day, said that it sounded like Villafane was battling Amanda Miller for the second spot, had a mechanical. Courtney was able to get around her, and then Courtney and Villafane battled kind of for the third spot, and Courtney was kind of able to hold her off. But she said that if it wasn't for that mechanical, that Villafane really had the stuff that day. And if it wasn't for that mechanical, it would have been tough for her to get around her to get that third spot on the podium. So but that did obviously happen. So I just wanted to throw her name out there because like she had a great weekend of racing.
And she's sort of been building up to that. It seems like this has definitely been a season for her to get towards those podiums, and it's only going to be stronger. And I guess it's good for those people going to U.S. Nationals that they don't have to deal with her this year.
That was definitely someone at because what did she race last year in Nationals? Did she race in the Elite or was she in
no,
the
she's
U23? U23.
Yeah, U23. Yeah.
I mean, that was, you know, she had, I think, a last row start, and was she second?
Second or third, right?
Yeah,
you know, that was
there.
Someone you could definitely see. Like,
I think she was second. Yeah.
You know, here's a name you're going to hear again. Before
yes,
too long.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. What else do we want to say about these races? Rebecca Ferringer, two good days at the Supercross Cup this past weekend, getting third place both days. That's pretty cool.
We had similar weather scenario to the weather in LA out here this weekend, which was it was in the low 60s on Saturday. And I wasn't at that race, but looked mostly like kind of a lot of grass, a lot of off camber, a lot of climbing. And then Sunday woke up to like an inch of snow.
Yeah. What?
So, yeah, I woke up. I live in the city in New York City, and I, you know, woke up and I looked at Instagram, some friends at the race, and they're, you know, posting photos of an inch of snow on the ground. So it was like 62 or something on Saturday, file treads. And then Sunday, snow, heavy mud, a lot of running. There was like a climb in that race.
I think it was a lot of elevation. Yeah.
Yeah. And like the videos and the stills I saw of it, you see like the person running and then you see the people at the bottom of the hill and they look real, real tiny. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it was just like a crazy run up. I don't know how long it was, but
yeah, that's what they said. And it was sort of cool. Cause I think that course that they have, and hopefully they didn't trash it to the point that they can't go back, was yeah, exactly what you said. It was just like this speed course on Saturday, but still really exciting. And then Sunday it just became this, you know, mutter and running race. And
so one other thing I want to mention going back to CXLA, I know we're kind of jumping around here, but that was kind of the thing, but is Tobin getting two wins? That's pretty cool for him. I want to just throw that out there. Definitely should mention that he got back-to-back wins.
I mean, pretty fortuitous if any of those guys had, you know, sort of were going back and forth if they were going to go to the World Cup or stay in the States, you know. Turned out the right decision not to travel.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, all right. Well, hey, so let's, before we move on to the Europe stuff, Bill, how about?
Well, I want to say one. Okay. I'll get to a question. I do want to, because I don't know if we want to step into this at all, but there is the question of that other, you know, we were talking why I sort of set the table with the good double C2 weekend with LA and Rochester, when you had a powerhouse like Northampton that was drawing the biggest fields, and then you have this Tulsa race on the same weekend. And
yeah, didn't get a huge field at the Tulsa race.
No, and that's, I think, you know, and I sort of have been just sort of thinking about, and it comes back to, one, the number of C2 races out there. You know, nothing against Tulsa. I mean, they're putting on the best race they can. They're just not drawing people. And I know there's arguments. I think even Corey was saying, you know, that's how you build scenes. And I'm like, okay, by having these races. But it's there were only 7 people in the women's race.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. I think it's a lot of, I think there's several factors. One, another factor, I believe, is this packed schedule that we've had this season. With the all the C1s jammed up into September and October, people are just tired. They're taking this, if they're not going to Europe, they're just taking this as a break. You know, they're just like, I'm going to chill for a little bit. Now, I know we had a lot of big names at both races this weekend, but I think that weekend being so close after, you know, after having all those, the C1s and the World Cups and everything together, I know I am still like relaxing and recovering. So I think that probably had some play into that too.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt that at all. But what concerns me is that you've set up this system, especially just looking, you know, we're coming up to to nationals and looking at that as sort of a goal, and also looking at what does the Pro CX really mean? Well, at this point, you know, and that's what I was sort of trying to gauge people's interest in it on Twitter and social media today. And there's not really much interest. The only interest is for riders who are sort of at that
on the bubble.
Yeah, they're on that Mendoza line. It's that top 90, top 90 in the pro. Glad somebody got it.
David's always good for this.
Current events every now and then.
Current events from 40 years ago.
That's current. You're as old as I am.
But yeah, so top 90 goes to can race elites in cyclocross nationals.
Yeah, so let's just review that. So you got to be top 90 in the Pro CX list, right?
I think the end of December. I mean, so if you get in there, then you can sort of petition at the last minute. You know.
Yes, right. Or you have to have a UCI point, right? I think a UCI point automatically gets you into
that's
U.S.
correct.
Nationals.
So that's what I was getting at. So the one thing is, like, Pro CX is, you know, we got to figure out how to make that something that people follow, because it's too disparate and all over the place and people don't follow it now, except for the people who are on that bubble that want to go to nationals. So it's important to them.
Right.
The way to get around that is to get a UCI point. I think it devalues a UCI point. I can remember a time just not even that many years ago when getting a UCI point was a huge deal. Like, there weren't as many, you know, UCI races in the U.S., and there were people who would go their whole elite cyclocross career with the goal of getting a single point. That was it. And that was like a huge accomplishment. It was like, all right, I put all this time into it. This is what my goal is. And, you know, to reach that goal. You could have, there was golden tickets to nationals left on the table in Tulsa.
Yeah, there's three more in the women's race. There's three more women that could have, just by entering,
could have automatically gone. They could have been 300th in the country as long as they bought a UCI license, you know, or a Cat 1-2, they could have gone to nationals.
Right. So,
but at that point, if you're just stepping up to the line, and maybe there are people that want to toe the line, even if it's the back line at nationals, to get lapped and pulled early on. I don't know. Perhaps there are people that are looking for that bib to hang in their garage over their bike, but just because you get the golden ticket, you get to go there, but no one's paying your way. No, it's still.
I think that's a push for me. No, I agree, but that's the example. But it's more a question of equity. So you're saying that, and again, I'm sorry, Tulsa. I honestly am not picking on you. It's just the circumstance. But you're saying that spot that they're fighting for is the same as the spot, a seventh place spot that the women in Guevara were fighting for.
I'm just going to throw, and I'm not sure how I land on this, probably somewhere in the middle, but I'm going to throw the other side to you, which is you can only race the people that show up.
I agree.
And if only six other women show up, I'm not going to
apologize. I don't disagree with that. And what I say next is not to say that Tulsa should go away. That is not what I'm saying at all. But what I'm saying is, maybe looking at all of the races, maybe there are too many.
So Tulsa, send your hate mail to CXHairs.
Feedback at CXHairs.com.
There you go. Sorry.
What did we get in trouble?
Cross Crusade. Evidently, we're not. We have to be nicer to Cross Crusade. That was the criticism.
We should be nicer to Cross Crusade, because Cross Crusade is awesome. Man.
I know. I didn't know that we were not, but I guess.
We got to get Sherry on the show one of these days.
Then we'll have a great guest.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I hear what you're saying, Bill. But partly is the other thing, though, is the map that you posted today on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, so when you talk about regional racing, I mean, obviously, with this huge country, we should be able to support more regional racing too, right? So I don't know. I don't know if I like the less races. I'm totally like, I don't know what to do about this. I'm just like, I don't have an opinion, Dan.
Yeah, but I also think it's something that we could we could spend a lot more time on there. But I just want people to think about what they want out of their Pro CX. And having a series, yes, it's not going to be a Pro CX series. Somebody has to come in there and like have money and all that kind of stuff that we have talked about ad nauseum about how to create a professional series of 8 races, you know, and that's it. Four weekends, and then you can have something that people will care about.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the reason why I'm not as concerned about it being, like you say, a free ticket to Nationals is there's probably not a lot of people not getting to Nationals that want to get to Nationals. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think a bigger field at Nationals is a bigger eligible field, because not everyone will show up, but a bigger eligible field is that big of a problem, I don't think.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It's you know.
Yeah.
And I think 90's good. It's probably even too many there. But
yeah, could be.
Yeah. Ed, any thoughts on this?
We've
been cutting you off for like 5 minutes.
No. It's actually fun because I feel like I'm listening to the podcast, and I realize I'm actually in the podcast. I should probably say something. The
kind of like David every week.
Except you're not sleeping.
If I had better sound equipment, I could get my edge.
Maybe interesting, minorly interesting side note of this is that Northampton used to be on the other end of this.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it used to be the same weekend as, either Cincy or Louisville.
It was a Cincy three-day. Cincy three-day and CSI were
so
all
no one, there. None of the like really heavy hitters ever came to it. And it was always kind of like a great race and a great atmosphere. And you always kind of were wishing, you know, some of the really top guys were there and women. But so this year was kind of neat to see, you know, a lot of the really top racers out there. So I believe they moved it back a week this year in the schedule. So, So it didn't conflict. It always conflicted with a C1 previously.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. No, and it was good. And that's what I was saying. That was just, that was a good weekend. And then, you know, following it up with that Supercross CXLA was a cool weekend too. All right,
Bill.
Yes. Oh,
question.
Let's do some questions.
Hit us with a question.
All right. Why in God's name would anybody need a dropper post on a cyclocross bike? I'm going to leave this to the bike shop guy.
I think you need
No, that was from Jimmy.
Hydraulic.
That was from Jimmy, Rogue Velvet Racing.
Jimmy, what? Go ahead, give him his proper due.
Is this like a serious question, really?
Yeah.
Awesome. That's a good question because I've asked myself the same thing. I say the same thing when I saw all the dropper post stuff. Why would you put that on a cross bike?
I don't know, Ed, when you were looking at that descent and like scary pro only section. I mean, yeah, maybe.
You know, it's actually like funny because a coworker asked me the same question this week. It's an odd coincidence, but I personally don't think it's necessary. I mean, on a really steep descent, you can just, you know, hang your butt off the back of the saddle or whatever. But there was a guy kicking around locally, or maybe in the New England races last year, I think, who had hooked up a dropper post to a left shifter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that video. Remember that? That is awesome. Yeah. Just the design and the function of it. I think it was cool.
More of that. I think it actually had more to do with that than the actual function.
I will tell you this, just because I know people who have always pined for a dropper post because they are, let's say, of master's age and getting back on their bike after like remounting after barriers with their hip issues. They're like, if I just had a dropper post.
That is, well, see, that's great then. Hey, if it keeps them racing,
who cares?
And the
ability to remember to lower your post as you dismount the bike. I'm telling you, man, here's another time where
you know
you got an addendum. To the cyclocross book.
Yeah, and you know what you do? You have it remote, right? And this would actually be really easy because it's not, you could even have it wired and it wouldn't be that long. You put your lever, your button, right on your top tube where you're going to grab the bike.
Man. That's right.
So when you get off, you hit that, you know, you grab your top tube with your right hand, you drop your saddle.
Yep.
Next, we're going to be having entire shows talking about where's the best place to mount the button. If you have a water bottle, where's the best place to mount the button? If you don't have if the water bottle is on the seat.
Hey, you know, you can also look down and see where your gears are at and change them there too while you're with those little.
Yeah. But then you stand up because you got to raise that post back up. So you're standing on the pedals, you hit that button again.
Well, you have a second button.
That jolt of adrenaline as you are hanging a little bit to that saddle when it comes back up to meet you.
Yeah, well, that's true.
It's going to bring back. It's going to bring on the horsey mount, David.
The horsey mount. Yeah.
I think this is industry driven, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Disc brakes.
They got everybody on disc brakes. They got
right
through axle.
The next fight.
Yeah. Exactly. Don't need any of that stuff, man.
Do we want? Should we use that as a segue to the disc brake question?
Yes, that would be a good one. Yes, because that's a really good question. Not that the dropper post question wasn't a good one, but this is a really good question.
Yeah. All right. So this is from Simon Denton on from Twitter, and he asked. Sorry, David. He asked me and Scott. He says.
He knows. He knows.
He said.
No, if we talk in language lessons, though, I can help you with language.
He said, "Hi. I see from the recent Cadence tweet that Katie Copton is running mechanical discs on her Boone. Why not run hydro?" So I asked Mr. Katie Compton, Mark Legg, why that was, and here is his response. He says, because it's almost a pound lighter, and most of the weight is off the handlebars, which improves the bike handling. Also, Katie can use the sprint shifters. Hydro levers, including the new DuraAce, don't have the port for the sprint shifters. Mechanical is easier to maintain, and I can switch out the cable if it doesn't feel right in a minute, while hydro is very time-consuming and messy, although it's rare I have to re-bleed hydro brakes.
That's a good answer.
So, yeah, wait, I mean, if she's comfortable with the modulation and everything else and the braking power, then if that's, you know, if it truly is a weight penalty to have those hydros on there.
And it both, I mean, when you say it's a good answer.
Wait, so do they have electronic shifting but then mechanical brakes?
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe that's what she runs. Yeah, DI2. Gotcha. Yep. Yep. Yeah, I think the key there is what you said, Bill. If she's fine with the modulation of the mechanicals, awesome. Go for it. Perfect. What were you going to say, David?
I think that...
Well, we know it's the right answer because Mark's
yeah, I mean, when you ask why she does it, that is why she does it, right? Right.
Yeah, we're really not going to get a better answer for why she does it. That's correct.
Yeah.
all right. Well, did we want to do an
answer because it meets her sponsorship ideas as well, right? I mean, Trek certainly wants her on, and they only have disc brake bikes. She can race a disc brake, a bike that may have a little less modulation and less braking control, as she did very well on Canties. And here she can save that weight penalty and still be racing on discs.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right, Bill, do we want to do another question or do we want to move on to some Europe stuff? It's up to you.
Yeah, I mean, we have a question, sort of what we've already covered, just about, I don't know, maybe we can't run through this quickly, but I'll read it and we can see what we want to say. It says, for those of us who have not quite followed along for as long, what does making a Belgian-style national series mean? And based on the size and difference between the U.S. and Belgium, not just the maybe it's worth exploring different structures than what works in a much smaller country, which is the motherland of the sport. As I was discussing this when these questions were to spawn from on Twitter today, Adam Meyerson did send me a clip of the trailer of Groundhog Day, because this is all stuff that we have been sort of arguing around and around for
forever.
Forever, yeah. And I think it's right, and that's why I sort of just hit hit home the message of what we're dealing with is, if you want to go on Twitter and look, I posted a picture of the eastern half of the country with Belgium plopped down, and it takes up about the same space as Maryland does. Yeah. So that's the place that has, two national series, a third sort of loosely the Soudal Classics isn't really a series, but just a group of races plus,
right,
you know, several World Cups, and nobody drives over an hour to any of them, you know.
Yeah. I think Jens Dekker replied to your tweet, said if he drives 2.5 or 3.5 hours, people think he's crazy.
Yeah, because he's coming from the Netherlands.
And here that would get you nowhere close to most races.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a unique problem. The country's huge. I don't think we have a good solution for it yet. And hopefully someday, I think one of the possible things is if cross becomes a more popular sport, a bigger sport, and we could have regional series that were all awesome, that then, you know, somehow people came together at certain points throughout the year where everyone raced, would be great. So,
or
who knows?
One of the suggestions, make everybody move to the,
sure.
Northern East Coast,
yeah,
and just have all of the series there.
There we go.
Wasn't there like almost an entire episode on why the series don't work or how a series could work?
Yeah. Yeah, we've been over this so many times.
You could refer him to that episode and he could just download it.
Yeah, actually, if you go listen to Adam Meyerson's episode, we get into that and just about...
Pretty good. That's probably the best explanation.
You know, and that was the... You know, and he's a proponent of all of the C2s, although I do think that we're reaching that point where it's enough. You can have these regional, almost regional series like Scott is talking about, but... You have to schedule it so that makes sense. And I think that the scheduling,
yes, I agree,
has not necessarily promoted that kind of regional rivalries. And so, yeah, because, yeah.
And you see, like, how this past weekend, how that could really work, you know?
Yeah.
You had two really good races on opposite coasts that both had good attendance by really top racers and had good racing. And maybe with a little bit of forethought of the scheduling and of locations of C2s, you could kind of develop more of that.
Yeah,
I have several weekends that were just like that.
And
absolutely.
The other piece in that is that to do that, promoters have to want to hold a C2 or even a C1 event. You know, and this is sort of this misconception as well that I know we've talked about before, that that's not USA Cycling's job.
Yes.
They're not going to come in and like tell people to put on a C1 or C2 or do it themselves. It has to come from local regions. So if the Pacific Northwest wants a C1 or a C2 race, they have to put on a C1 or C2 race.
Yeah, somebody's got to do it. Right, exactly.
And I think that
something has to make it a worthwhile endeavor, though.
Well, and that's the problem. And I think that that's what we can sit. I can sit here in D.C. Adam Meyerson can sit up in Massachusetts, and it's a lot easier for us because, as we all know, these races are supported on the backs of everybody else who races during the weekend. And we have the density to support that. We have the density to have 1,000 people race on each day, and that's going to make it possible to pay the UCI the exorbitant sums of money that they want, and USA Cycling, and everybody else. If you're in a region that doesn't draw like that, like I think that's what Northern California runs into, then it's tough. It's tough to break even. So why would you do that instead of just having your local races where you're not paying all those fees and you can come out a little bit ahead in the end?
Right. And have the exact same field, probably.
Right. Yeah. So.
Or close to it. Yeah.
So when we solve that, we'll let you all know. But that was. But thank you.
I feel like I've heard this before.
Yeah, I know. It's retreading old stuff. But that was Mark Wilson. I don't know if we answered your question, but there it is.
All right. Well, let's talk about Europe. Let's talk about Hasselt. Sound good?
It does. I know why David's so quiet.
because he's got us.
Why might that be?
Because he's tweeting.
Oh. You know what? It's, I'm looking at my phone at the same time going, what are you talking about?
Now I feel bad because I've left one of us alone.
All right. So, Hassel, do you guys have some results that you want to read? Who has? Ed, read us the results.
Maybe David should do it.
What?
I would defer. Really? Defer. I mean, all right. I'll do it if you want, but
yeah, go for it, man. Go for it.
Right. Oh,
it's sort of like the initiation. Dave. You have to read the names now.
Okay. What? What, top five? Top three?
Whatever you want, man.
I'll do top five.
All right.
I'll start with five. Joyce Van Becken. Fourth, Christine Majerus. Third, Elle Anderson. Second, Ellen Van Loy, and first, Sana Khan.
Majerus nice. Has been showing up a lot in these
unbelievably
results.
So.
Yeah. She actually, I believe,
in the front of a the last few races in Europe now.
Yeah,
the women's race was not televised, but I believe she had kind of, I don't know if she had third locked up, but was in a big battle with Anderson for third, maybe. And her saddle broke. And basically, she was unable to pedal effectively after that.
Needed a dropper post.
Yeah. Well, there's actually...
It becomes an effect, it's a dropper post.
In the video clip, I guess she had dismounted and then was trying to get back on the bike and there's no saddle and it was really messy.
Whoa. So.
I completely agree, though. I mean, I think... Do you guys remember how as we got towards the middle to later part of the season last year... Thalita De Jong started coming on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then goes and wins Worlds. It kind of is reminded me of that.
Mm.
So, Scott, if I'm hearing you
correctly, I'm not making any predictions
Christine Majerus for Worlds. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying I think she could be a player at Worlds for sure. I'm not going to predict the winner yet, but I think she could be a player at Worlds for sure. Don't you guys get that? I just get that same kind of feeling. It just is. That's one of the things I thought of when I started thinking about her was, man, it's kind of the way that Thalita De Jong came on at the end of the year.
Do you know the? I mean, that would be perfect. It's almost what we were talking about with Nash. Majerus is from Luxembourg.
Yes, I know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it definitely seems. I mean,
she's
way
gonna
more...
have. They should be. They should be building. She's. It's not like they have to build the course for any men.
True. True.
So they, you know, in the way that Czech course was built for Stibar, who then decided not to race, they should be building this course specifically for her strengths. That should be their number one concern for the Beals course.
Now, if she does go on and win, you know I'm going to refer back to this show and say, remember, I predicted that.
Yeah.
You've already been trying to backpedal.
I know.
From that
I know. I want more. I want a more bold prediction. No one's going to remember if not. So, Scott, who's going to win Worlds?
Yeah. I can't say. I know, but I'm not. I can't say yet.
It definitely seems way more open this year. I mean, no one is dominating. There's been a lot of different.
Well, it's been fun with the Jolene and Sanya show at the front of a lot of these.
Yeah,
actually, Jolene had a false start.
Oh.
But didn't. They didn't call it back.
Interesting.
And Sana Khan protested, but then went on to win anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, give and us. Go ahead. Go ahead, Ed.
Just a quick mention, Elle Anderson in third there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got to mention
awesome.
That. You know, she's putting together a solid season over there, I think, you know? Don't you guys
definitely.
Agree?
I don't know. Yeah. Did you guys see, there was like some of the details of her experience over last time came out. They're pretty nasty.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I've heard some behind the scenes stuff about that, and
so it's really nice to see her kind of being. I don't know what her setup is this time around, but it definitely seems to be.
Oh, I can tell you, she's in a much better place as far as living conditions and all that are concerned.
Yeah.
She was happy to go, and I think happy to be there.
Yeah, that's cool to see, and I think you know just by looking at her social media stuff too. Again, it just looks like she's. enjoying herself a lot more. You can just see her like having fun. Like the thing she just did with SRAM on her bike,
right,
was kind of funny. And she tweeted about how nervous she was doing that and that kind of stuff. So I think she's getting along much better this time. So good to see. All right, Ed, you want to hit us with some men's results?
Sure. We had fifth, Vitsa Bosmans. Fourth, Vincent Bastens. Third, Corne Van Kessel. Second, Clement Venturini. And first, Laurent Zwick.
Zwick.
Some different names in there. Yeah.
Zwick finally getting the win on the last lap, not just the first lap.
Right.
Yeah. He really put together, I don't know, did you guys see this race?
I did not see it, no.
I did not either, no.
He really put together a good race. Corne Van Kessel got out early and led for a lot of the race. And then Clement Venturini was kind of very, very aggressive, you know, early on, and then did a lot of work to bring Van Kessel back. And Zwick just kind of like, you know, was sort of, I guess it's pretty cliche to say mature beyond his years, but definitely showed a lot of patience, didn't do a lot of work. In the middle of the race, he actually seemed to be really tired. And had like a crash in the barriers. There was a very, very like deep, muddy section in between the two barriers, the planks. Yeah. And guys trying to jump them, you know, it was really hard to line up correctly. And he had a crash and he just looked kind of fatigued and like he was sort of worn out. And he just sort of sat in and waited and let Venturini do most of the work. And then they brought back Van Kessel and he attacked in the end and won.
Very non-Zwick way to win. I mean,
yeah.
Normally he goes out crazy hard in the beginning and sees how long he can last. Here he sat back and either learned a lesson or just for whatever reason went about it differently and had a great result.
Or we can talk about the 2 800-pound gorillas that weren't in the room.
Yeah.
Which is,
of course.
What's this? Whoa, wait.
There's no Wout. There's no Vanderpool. Yeah. So he doesn't have to go out, you know, all out at the front to try to somehow, you know, break those guys. I don't know what his plan is on those races, but, you know, it was good.
The truth be told, he's one of my favorite racers. I mean, I think he makes the races more exciting no matter who's in the field. You know, when those two guys are there, I love it when he's there too, because he makes the races more exciting to watch, in my opinion. One of my favorite guys out there.
And also worth mentioning, Corne Van Kessel starting to have a really, really good year as well. Getting in a lot of podiums.
Yeah, he actually looked like he was going to win, which I thought was interesting because this is sort of the third race that Telnet has brought a third weapon. So you had, you know, Van Kessel and then Toon Aerts won European championships and Mayusen won the other race that Wout and Matthew weren't in. But
the group ride?
Yeah. the race for Wout's teammates.
Yeah.
It just sort of showed they have some depth. Maybe they don't have like the top guy, you know, maybe when.
Yeah.
I think that Toon Aerts and Corne Van Kessel have been the two revelations on that team. And I'm sure that Sven's very happy, especially now that, you know, Lars isn't going to be showing up for some time, that he's got two younger guys who are really starting to come into their own.
Yeah. And once it definitely seems like it's going to be on. Yeah.
There's depth on that team. And it, like I said, it might not be like, you know, the very top guys, but there's some really good guys and there's several of them.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that Easerbeat isn't on Telenet anymore. That would have made sense then. I'm like looking at my notes for Guevara and that like just popped out of my head. So
yeah, well,
I think it's also cool to see Venturini is kind of like, you know, getting in there and mixing it up in these races. He's very aggressive and it's kind of neat to just see some different person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think, and going to your, you know, sort of point/joke, Scott, is that it's actually good that Easerbeat is on Marlux now, because him and Quentin Ehrmans have had good battles for all those U23 races. So it's nice to see a little rivalry there instead of having both of them on the same team.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, all also, right. Stephen Hyde was in
this race.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, tell us.
So he first race in the Pan Am Champs kit. Looked pretty cool. Went with the white shorts, full white.
I was going to ask if he was wearing white bibs.
The full white, not even the black, like, you know, center panel pre-dyed.
Oh, man.
It was full on. Yeah, the full on. So, look good, though. He had a great start. He was in the top five all through the first kind of two, three laps. And then it looked a little bit like, I wasn't sure if he was like yo-yoing or if he was just leaving some space in front of him. But they came around when, I guess when Van Kessel got off the front the first time, the group kind of sat up and he actually was forced to take up the chase. And then I'm not exactly sure what happened, but in the background of one of the shots, it looked like maybe he had a bike issue or went in to the pit. And the next time they came through, he was way back.
Hmm.
So I don't know if he had a mechanical or he just kind of maybe blew up, but I don't know if you guys saw anything on any other sources.
I have not seen any reason why, but he did finish 12th, which
So he kind of like brought it back together at the end for sure.
All right, let's move on to Guevara. We're never going to get through all this stuff. That is the Super Prestige number 4. Results, I'm going to start with the men. First place was Matthew Vanderpoel. Second place, Wout Van Aert. Third place, Tone Aerts. Fourth place, Klaus Vanternote. Fifth place, Lorenz Sweek. Comments, Vanderpoel winning all four of the Super Prestige now, right?
Oh, man. First comment. Yeah. No, he's like crushing those. I guess a couple things. First, Wout,
chain issue.
Yeah. We got to come up with a name for this position, just, you know, with your whole body over your top tube, like trying to put your chain back on. But yeah, another one of those for him. So he still hasn't figured that issue out.
His chain still needs to be shorter.
It needs to be even shorter. Even shorter.
Take even another link out, damn it.
KH, call, please.
He's gonna have a gate.
I mean, isn't there a built-in keeper on that? Sram?
They put one on. They put another one. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
He needs like a full-on chain guard like the old Schwinn used to have.
So this is one of our favorite, you know, features on a course at the Bounty Castle walls.
Yes.
And they got used. Did y'all see Vermeer just like Vermeer himself on a post?
Oh yeah. Oh man. When he hit that post?
Yeah. Like you could actually see the birds flying around his head.
Yeah.
Because he got up and he like shook his head and he was like, oh man.
It's like a breaking away moment, you know, like when you're a cartoon and your head takes the shape of the pan and you shake your head.
So I hope he's okay from that. But that it's one of those things like that was right there with the inflatable barriers, but he went down on the other side. Yeah. But I love that course. That's it's such a fun course to watch. And Vanderpoel just, you know, when he shows up and races in these super prestige races, it's just lights out.
I wonder if he rode home after that one. And we'll get to that. So for the women at Guevara, first place was Sanne Kant. Second place, Jolene Verschuren. Third place, Christine Majerus. Fourth place, Ellen Van Looy. Fifth place, Alice Maria Arzufi from Italy.
She had a really good race.
So another good race for Majerus. Another good race for Verschuren. And Sanne Kant getting the win. It's looking, I'm telling you, the women's, as usual, the women's, the competition in the women's field is there every year. This year is no exception, and it's really getting exciting as we start to approach world. So,
yeah, it's always hard watching Jolene on these courses with this deep mud just struggling because she's so tiny. And then, of course, I think we have to mention her pit exchange.
Yeah, hey,
I checked
in with some folks on that. Did you hear that? Did you?
What?
No.
No? Let's see if we can hear him again.
Oh, jeez.
What's wrong with that, man? You know, after we had the Jolene, there were a lot of people like that, but...
I can't even hear it.
It's Chumbawamba.
It's Chumbawamba. I get knocked down, but I get up again.
that in debate.
I'll just drop that in post for you.
Thanks. In post, listen how cool we are now.
But yeah,
there's more. There's actually some serious stuff in there too. The Telenet women have been really strong all over the top of these races. And yet, the support of the women seems to be going away in the upcoming future. No,
that's the word we're getting, that they, that they don't get a salary, that they get some expenses and, not a lot of support from, Telenet, and probably going away. And, Vershuren, looks like, and, 2018, she will be moving on to a different team.
And Ellen Van Looy, as always, just is awesome.
Yeah,
she's just amazing.
So this actually, we can this brings us back to one of our viewer mail questions. Well, two things, and one, I think we can, you know, since we need to go back and talk about Vershuren's pit tumble, because this person's asking again about the pit at Neil, which I think we talked about some, just how it was crazy, and it was easier to go through the pit than it was to actually go through the
you had to make a few right turns.
Yeah.
Right. To avoid the
They actually had a road marshal or force marshal in there directing traffic for the racers once they were getting into negotiating the craziness of that pit.
That was insane. Yeah, because there was one time he was like following Kant into the pit to make sure nobody was gonna. Yeah, it was just weird.
And then they had like that the Harlem Globetrotter weave coming out of the pit as the racers were coming through.
I like that.
Yeah, it was both the entrance and the exit of the pit were really strange.
So
here's
the follow-up question. This is from Johnny. Do Julian Vershuren and Ellen Van Looy hate each other?
like we know that or something?
We know.
Actually, I did hear... I didn't hear anything.
Okay. I'm like, oh, really? Wait a minute.
I will say that, you know, Vershuren has definitely been called out for like making some comments where she doesn't think, you know, about maybe not necessarily towing the team line. Ellen Van Looy is like company woman. You know, she's always given the right answers. But you have to think that she's got to feel a little pissed off when she's like, you know, has this little, you know, fruit fly that just is like whizzing around her at certain points in the race.
Fruit fly.
They definitely, you're not going to mistake their bikes for one another, are you?
No.
I mean, they're about as different as you can get size wise.
It's tough to do that team photo.
Yeah, right.
That's what Apple boxes are for.
All right, guys, vertical. Let's move on to the discussion of Kokusaida.
Oh, what a race. Oh, my God. I love that one. A monument.
Cancellation of a World Cup. First
ever. You mean when they had to reschedule in Louisville? Oh, no, that wasn't World Cup. Sorry. No. You mean there was something else that had issues?
You mean a non-U.S. race that had issues? But okay, so the race is canceled, and it was, you know, it was an agreed upon decision by the organization committee, the city, the UCI, and the security services.
I heard they were trying to protect the heritage sand.
Beach grass.
But I think Matthew Vanderpool said something about he thought they made the decision a little bit too early. Other than that, I haven't heard anybody say this was the wrong decision, right?
No, everybody,
I mean, based on the videos and stuff we're seeing, it's like, oh my God. Yeah, you can't race in that. I mean, there's there's debris flying, you know, through the air and stuff.
And let's be clear.
I think I saw the Women CX Project tent fly through the
street. Yeah, it might have. It might have been.
Either that or the Alma GP
it actually finally landed. It's just been orbiting ever since Jingle Cross.
What were you going to say, Bill?
I was like, let's be clear. The VIP tent, you know, lost its top and blew away. And if you can't have a VIP tent, how can you have a race?
How can
What's
you have
point,
a race?
Even?
Yeah.
You can't sell beer at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so basically everybody's in agreement that it was probably the right decision, right?
It was, yes. I believe it was definitely the right decision. Vanderpool putting a little, you know, exclamation point on his questioning by just going and riding 120 miles in the wind afterwards. Home.
But it was
from the
wind
race
at his back.
Yeah, that was like everybody was like, well, he did have a tailwind. I'm like, he rode 130 miles with his brother.
Yeah.
I don't know
his brother. You saying that he had to pull his brother along? Is that
He probably did.
I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but I just sort of made me feel a little bit like what he had said about the Cross Vegas, you know, like, well, you know, it's just kind of, you had, Wout made this very, you know, diplomatic statement that the UCI made the right choice and, you know, riders safety first. And this is, hard, you know, I'm disappointed, but it's good to see that they made the right decision and stuff. And I don't know. Vanderpool just sort of had to make a little dig, you know, like, well, they didn't even wait long enough. And then, like you said, he rode home and sort of just made me kind of think of what he had said about Cross Vegas not being worth going or not being too expensive or not worth spending the money on.
I agree. It's the same kind of underlying attitude kind of about it, you know? Yeah, no, I agree. I felt the same thing. One thing I did think was cool, though, was the organizer, Jan Deremoet, I think is how it pronounces. I know a lot of people were talking about budget and how much money, and it was interesting. He said, you know, that they run on a budget of like 150,000 euros. Obviously they have insurance. So, you know, that's still up in the air what they will be able to recoup for that. But one of the other cool things that he said was, he said that he had heard that a lot of fans, and this is really cool, that said they were simply going to, as a show of support and sympathy, were simply going to not refund their tickets.
Yeah.
They were just going to let the organization keep the tickets. And the fact that he recognized that and said, thank you for that, that was really cool, I thought. He wasn't saying, please don't return your tickets. He's just saying thank you to the people who have made that statement. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And as a horrible position as they're in, having to cancel their race, and it stinks, and it stinks, you know, and let's not forget about all of the Americans who flew over there for that race and then couldn't race. So, you know, hardship for them as well. But they are a race that can survive this, which is good. You know, there, if this happened other places, World Cup, that didn't have the support of the town and the support of, you know, it's a race that has a lot of parties that make it possible and make it so it can survive. And we're not going to lose that one because of this, because it's going to be a huge financial hit, but you know, they're in a good situation that they can bounce back from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Had
they go ahead and sanction this race with USA Cycling, they could have gotten the ancillary event liability, event cancellation, weather insurance. I'm just saying. Support your local authority. Sorry. Sorry.
I woke up Sunday morning and I had kind of woken up a little later than I thought, and I've been having issues with my methods that I use to watch some of these, you know, geo-blocked races. And, you know, I log on, I'm like, huh, it's not here, you know? So I was searching another site, what's going on? It's not here either. And I was kind of like starting to, I'm missing the beginning, you know, how come I can't find the race? What's going on? I gotta go to the UCI site. Why isn't it on the UCI site? And then I just had no idea what was happening. And I'm like frantically going between all these different sites. And then finally I just went on Cycling News and it said, you know, big headline that it was canceled.
And then you were relieved. You were actually relieved that it was canceled.
But I just went back to sleep.
So, I mean, a crazy thing. Were you going to say something, Bill?
I was, but I was going to let you finish.
No, go ahead. Okay. I was going to take us on to the end, wrapping it up.
Well, I do want to just going back to what we were talking about with the difference between Vanderpool's response and Wout Van Aert's responses. I kind of dig it. I love it because it really just goes with what I want to see. It is truly setting them up to be the next Niels and Sven. You had Wout Van Aert who is a very, you know, precision rider, very careful, you know, wants to sit in and see what's going on. And we know this, he's a tactician and that's how he wins. He's also a very good with people. He's a, you know, if you talk to him, he's very nice, very attentive. He's a pro through and through. He really is in that same mold that Sven is in. And then you look at right. Matthew Vanderpool, who's like, I may be winning this race, but that's a cool little thing over there that I'm going to session. I'm going to get some sweet air off of it and go and do that. And then he's going to say whatever the heck he wants. And if things go wrong, he's going to kick his bike and then it's going to be game over and he's not going to be able to recover. He's just like, you know, all emotion. And it's just sort of like all out there. And it's nice. They're great foils for each other. So it's good to have those different personalities. And I mean, he's going to be an awesome road racer.
I think that's a great comparison.
I mean, I agree that you love that they have these sort of opposite personalities because it really sets up this whole, you know, like their fan base, you know, kind of you have two totally separate personalities that you can kind of associate with or sort of, you know, see in yourself or whatever, you know, it's their draw totally two different types of people. But I just can't, I just like this whole season, you have this sense like he's got one foot out the door already.
Yeah.
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 You know, that.
And that was like everybody's comment. Oh, well, he's just putting in base miles for road, you know, doing that 130 miles.
You know, I mean, it's this great personality difference that makes, you know, gives this whole other element to the racing. You know, because it builds this kind of outside narrative outside of just the racing. But I just feel like he's almost at this point, like he just seems bored.
Well, again, you know? And again, look at that. He does this like crazy thing, just riding his bike. Not crazy, but, you know, just sort of like not what you would expect from a cyclocross racer this time of year. And then you look at Wout and what he was doing, which, you know, his infinite intervals where he's just doing like figure eights in the sand and practicing his sand technique because he wasn't able to race in the sand. And it's like, it's just like, I need to still get in this practice for the sand, for the net, you know? So it's, definitely, they're definitely good, a good yin and yang.
Yeah, and there's also that Belgian Dutch juxtaposition.
Yes.
True that.
Definitely.
All right. So the good news is we have another World Cup coming up in Zeven this weekend. You guys excited?
Are they excited? It was the most German description of a course I've ever seen. Like, well, it's got a lot of grass. There's a little climb, and it should be an okay course. That was them pumping up the people for the race. No, I think it's gonna be cool. I think that because Coke Cider was canceled, everybody's just gonna be nuts from the gun.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be. I agree. It'll be the same way. And so that is on Saturday, and then. No, is there no race in the U.S.? No UCI race in the U.S. this weekend? I don't think.
No, don't think Thanksgiving usually, no.
Yeah, nothing. But then the following weekend, we're going to have Ruts and Guts. We're going to have Major Taylor, and we're going to have NBX. So a lot of stuff to be talking about that week. And all right, guys, anything else? Bill, do we have any more questions?
We do.
All right, let's hit those.
All right, so somebody asked us about betting at Belgian cyclocross races. Please discuss betting culture around Belgian races. Can U.S. followers bet, and how much money are we talking? That was R. Hendry on Twitter asking that. I don't think it's anything we really know about. I know there are betting sites out there. I know like Golden Palace, you know, the sponsored
right,
team.
Right, obviously, yes.
And it's definitely out there. Our friend C's from Belgium actually chimed in on this one and said that betting at Belgian cyclocross and Kermesse races is mostly at the course, but it's dying due to laws and regulations. So Yeah, because what was always cool is, I mean, Powers has these pictures from years ago of the chalkboard outside of the bookie with where his odds were. Like he was sort of, you know, chalked in there under all the other favorites, which was sort of cool. I did pull up the Beals World Championship odds from some betting site.
Nice.
Where's Majerus?
I only got the men, sadly. It'd be interesting to see if there are even odds on the women, knowing how some things in Belgian society work. There may not be. But
I know that Scotty D is praying that there aren't.
With that prediction.
That prediction.
That spot on prediction.
Which now goes all topsy turvy. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. So I'm assuming these are Euros, but so Matthew Van Der Poel so far is the favorite at 1.9. So I'm assuming that's payout, you know, 1.9 to 1. Wout Van Aert, 2.30. And then it goes way down. So
who do they have for third? Or, you know, third highest chance.
What do y'all think? Who do you think is the third by the odds? I will tell you, it is a tie. Tie for third.
Van der Haar.
Sweet.
Van der Haar, not even given odds on this.
No.
What?
Guess
he's
they
not
don't.
Racing.
Oh, I thought this was.
Oh, no, no,
no. Score?
I'm sorry. I take it back. He is. He does have odds. It is not Van der Haar. I didn't see him down there. I was with the Vans. I didn't go to the Durs.
Oh. So who is it? I'll give.
It is a tie between Kevin Powles and Michael Van Turnout.
Should have guessed that.
I'm surprised Swick's not there.
Swick is right under them at 12.
So yeah. if I bet $2.
Yeah.
No.
On Kevin
Powles. Another Better Off Dead reference. I knew we were going there.
you should just bet one on Tobin Ortenblad, who's at 1,001 right now.
Oh, if I was there, I'd bet $2 on Tobin for sure. I'm going to tell him that next time. I'm going to give him $2 to go bet on himself.
Powers currently at 251. And ooh, look at that. No odds on Hyde.
Wow.
There you go.
He's an
All right, Bill. Any other questions?
Let's
questions,
see.
Comments, concerns?
We had one about the heckling at Supercross. I will say go watch the Adam Meyerson video from Dirtwire TV.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
And that's it? That was pretty good, though. Yep. That's like, what,
that was
six questions?
Yeah.
That's good. So keep sending questions. Listeners, please, please. We always like the questions, and we like finding out stuff, too, because it gives us a way to ask other people stuff that we don't know. So very awesome. So, hey, Ed.
I got one.
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys think it's weird there's no race, really? I mean, there's very few races Thanksgiving weekend. Like, you got a four-day weekend. Everyone's dying to get out of the house.
Well, everybody could go to Tawny Town, which is right on the Maryland, Pennsylvania border, and it's the Delaware, Maryland, D.C. State Championship and also the Mid-Atlantic Bike Racing Association Championship race. That's on Sunday.
That's cool. Yeah.
Are you going to go?
I will be out there announcing.
Tawny Town was a very instrumental town in the Civil War, in the Battle of Gettysburg. Absolutely. So go out and get some history lesson too.
Yeah,
but then you got to drive home and last Sunday after Thanksgiving.
DICX there, the Detroit Invitational Cyclocross.
Oh, that's right. That's an unsanctioned race that we have here in Detroit, where kids can throw marshmallows at the racers. That's always fun. As was Matt Anthony this past week, Mr. David Palin. Thank you. We had a great time out there, didn't we?
That was a blast. And Matt Anthony, man, we had a great course set up this year, and a big, big thanks to the good folks from Beat the Train. Andy Staub and Beat the Train has always been instrumental and was part of the founding of that, as well as getting the fort lined up for their continued support So people, if they're interested, definitely go to Facebook and look at Beat the Train.
And if you're in the D anytime after April 1st through the summer, come out on Saturday morning and do the Beat the Train ride. It's awesome.
Meets at 6:15 a.m. and does a Saturday ride through the mean streets of Detroit during the times when they're not so mean.
So part of that race was going like inside the fort. Inside, like there was like this hallway shot. It seemed like
it's like a tunnel. It's a tunnel.
That's
it's
amazing.
A sally port through the wall of the fort.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow. How awesome is that?
No, the pictures look awesome. Yeah, and even that little drop in like on the side of the fort looked really cool. The little descent. Yeah.
It's really cool.
And while we're making thank yous, Diane Weiss from the Detroit Free Press has always supported. She's the, just recently retired, Scott. I don't know if you knew that. Recently retired photo editor for the sports page of the Detroit Free Press. Go find her pictures. She usually does. And it's also on the Matt Anthony presented by Meet Lexus Facebook page. You can see her photo album. It's really cool, that venue, how well it photographs that time of year. But throw in the talent of someone that knows what they're doing with a camera. Really cool photographs out there.
Absolutely. All right, Ed, did you have contact information you would like to give out on the show?
I have just Instagram, which is Ed Nessen, EDNESSEN. And then I have Facebook, but it's only cat videos.
Yeah.
That's all I put on there. I don't have Twitter because I just feel like I would get really sucked into it.
You're a smart man.
Yes.
I just
and Mr. David Palin. Mr. David Palin, where can people get a hold of you?
Find me on the interwebs at Mr. David Palin on the tweets and the Instagrams.
Nice. Way to raise the level up. Way to raise that excitement up, David.
He's been at work all day. Drag him out of here.
And you can find me on Instagram.
And Bill, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CXHairs. And if you have any questions that you want or comments or concerns for us, it's feedback@CXHairs.com. Also want to mention, because I haven't been, that this show, Crosshairs Radio, is part of the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, which all of you should also be a member of, because there's awesome stuff going there. I actually... I always listen to Slow Ride Podcast. I love those guys. They crack me up. Meyerson Line, you know, when he gets on there and does stuff, Adam's doing great work, consummate athlete. But the one that I've really gotten into lately is the Honest Bicycle Program. They're a lot of fun, and they're one worth checking out. So go to wideanglepodium.com.
Yeah, cool. Everybody should definitely go check those out. And as always, you can find me, Scott Diedenbach. I am at CyclocrossNet on Twitter. That's usually the best way to get a hold of me. Guys, thanks for another great show. Ed, thanks for coming on and hanging with us for a while and bringing your insight.
You made a grown-up man's dream come true.
That's what we live for.
Really appreciate it.
Awesome.
All right, guys, and we will see you guys next time, man.
All right. All right, there you have it. Everything you need to know about cyclocross that happened in the past 2 weeks. Thanks again to Scott, David, and Ed for being with us for this episode of Crosshairs Radio. Also, one more time, I want to thank our sponsors for this show, Vene Vidi Velo Cycle Club. Go to venevidivelo.cc. First class is free. All single classes, $20 if you use the code $20, uppercase CLASS. And that's good for multiple classes. $99 for the first month, unlimited membership, which is regularly $190. That's good through November 30th. Get on that. www.venevidivelo.cc. Also, the 2016 Capital Cross Classic. It's happening December 4th. I want to see all of you out there. Go to bikereg.com, search for Capital Cross Classic, and sign up, and we'll have a party on December 4th. You, me, and a couple hundred of our closest friends. All right, we'll see you next time. Again.